Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFA Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just remind how to join us with a talk guest every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or you can look for SFU On Call or Starfleet Universe On Call. You should be able to find us there. But if you want the best online experience, what you want to go to, you want to go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you'll find there. You can join us there and watch my beautiful broadcast. And, of course, see my lovely face. Now, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, or X, or whatever it's called these days. I know I'm still on, and even though there's people still leaving, I'm still on, kind of. My accounts are there. And, of course, those are SFU On Call. That's, and also, for my personal account, that's Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. And my business account, which is Franz Games, F-R-A-N-Z-G-A-M-E-S. And of course, the lovely TalkCast gets to the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ABD this week. And as they've been working on, actually, Module T, at least investigating, sorry, not working on, but they're investigating a new Module T. And Steve Cole was just saying that, you know, that it's going to be kind of expensive. And though somebody did come up to give him some ideas that might just work. So he's still looking into that because someone asked him to do an updated Module T, and they go, well, you know, that could actually, that's doable, you know, because it's not that much work. And it could definitely, heck, I'd probably buy another copy just because I would have the updated rules and so forth, which would be great, you know. So we'll have to wait and see on that. The good part, actually, of course, this week is Steve Cole has been being able to get into the office more and more, which means more things get done, which is fantastic. And moving on to the found on the online store this week, of course, is Starfleet Times again. I'm going to go through the whole series so that you out there know what they have before you actually buy it. In this case, again, $7.95. This is issues 11 to 15. Got Naval Construction Docks and Warp Gate in number 11. Number 12, you got the Fiction Ebony Production Wheel Concept and Flivver Carrier Group. That would be an interesting ship. I'm not sure if you guys remember the Flivver from the Module C4. Kind of, it's an interesting ship with hover warp and that kind of thing. Moving on, we're to number 13, Number 13 is another humor issue, including bizarre ships like the Federation Police Mauler and other ones like that. Number 14, fighter bombers and bombers. This is way back in the day before they actually existed. These are 3 or 4 space fighters. And number 15 is first look at the Nicosians and the Jadarian tournament ship for playtest. Now, of course, we already know what that looks like, but, you know, for those of you who have not seen the Nicosians, you can actually look at them for only $7.95. And this is hard copies. I'm willing to bet you have not looked at this, that you might be able to get it for cheaper on ebook. I don't know. It might be the same price. In which case, I probably myself buy the ebook, but that's me. I've been trying to decrease the amount of physical books I have down to a minimum. Buy the ebooks, not steal, not copy from somebody else, but buy the ebooks so Steve Cole gets his fair share for his IP material. And going on from there, moving onward to the SFU Online tournament, we got the Sapphire Star 18 tournament. Signups are closed. You snooze, you lose. In this case, they've already got the tree has been posted. I have to set it up on SFU Online. I will hopefully be able to do that this weekend. If not, the worst case scenario, I will be doing it next week. Because, of course, it's Thanksgiving holiday, so I should have some time, maybe on Thanksgiving, maybe on the, after that. If I, that's assuming I won't be able to get, I will not be able to get it done this weekend. I should be able to get it done this weekend. It shouldn't take me that long, so I should be able to get that done. Take me 15 minutes, half an hour. Tough part is converting it back into a format that I can then run through my scripts. Moving onward and forward, there's nothing new on the online client other than there's an issue with Windows, which I think I told you about last week. I'm still haven't had a chance to go back and look at that. I'm gonna have to do a lot of work on that to get Windows up and running. I have to wait and see. I might have to install on, I don't want to think about that. Add on all the tools to actually run, create the installer on another VM. It'd be nightmarish. Moving on, went forward to the library report. There's no updates posted. Looks like there's probably some stuff in my email, which I need to go through so that there are some fixes that can be posted to the library. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's all the Paul fans welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. He actually showed up. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And actually, that's it for tonight. I'm here, but that's about it. Topics, actually, let me first do this. Apologize. I really need to remember to turn down the sound for the iPad before I start the podcast. I apologize for having to do that every single time to y'all. And you might just have accepted it by this point. But anyhow, actually, I want to do a quick talk about the Juggernauts. Again, there's actually some more posting, which is, it's going to be a quick discussion. Very, very short. Because I had some ideas, and I like them, and so I want to just bring them up real quick. Charles Gray actually thought of an alternate, basically a product, something like the Andromedan threat file. Put it up because have the Juggernaut with, you know, the different variants and so forth. The whole idea in my mind of what they're talking about in the Juggernaut threat file is basically to have a number of ships in the Juggernauts that would allow you to run a campaign with you being the Juggernaut. Actually, you know, the Juggernauts actually being a player, playable empire. You know, which I think would be kind of cool. Obviously, the question is, how many people actually would buy it other than me? Actually, I know I would buy it. I know Gary Carney, he would buy it too, which would be kind of cool. Gary Carney, the almighty and historian of SFB, he just mentioned that for its worth, he says, for what it's worth, the former Shapeways product pages for such units as the Juggernaut Battleship suggested that when quote unquote real data was uncovered regarding such units, they turned out to be remarkably close to the intelligence estimates worked up for those in the Starfleet Academy simulators. But again, this would not have made it definitively so, at least not without formal verification in SFB terms. And of course, even if such quote unquote real units were existing, it need not necessarily be in the alpha, where such data is to be directly sourced. And which I think Gary has a good point in, just because of when it comes to the Juggernauts, not only, at least according to the history of the Juggernauts, is that, here it is. This is the one that Gary brought up earlier with Capsule number 41, which was the Juggernaut Tartarus, which faced the Hive ship Star of Redemption, which was basically, which was outside of the Alpha Octant, outside of our galaxy, is when they met up in the fire in the deep fiction. So actually, what's one I got, I really need to buy catalog number 41. That'd be a good idea to do. But is there one? I wonder if the prospect of a dedicated home. Oh, don't get me started. Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading on, and he's mentioned having a dedicated home galaxy module. Lord knows, that's one thing I would love. I know Gary would love, which is, the only in home galaxy, and some of the history. Oh, okay. So we got another one. They would buy a Juggernaut threat book also. Hey, so we got three. Steve Cole, come on, we got three. So we know there's more out there that would definitely purchase that, especially considering that even for nothing else, a Juggernaut threat book would be that you could actually consolidate all of the Juggernaut ships into a single book. And then you can add some more from there. Obviously, you know, take a bit of work, and I'm not sure. Obviously, the biggest issue there, when it comes to having a Juggernaut thread book, would be time. You know, I know that with the injury that Steve Cole has been dealing with for what is it now? Jeez, oh, I forget how many. It's been a couple months, if not longer.
He ain't getting younger.
Oh, I know he's not getting younger. Don't get me thinking about that. It gets me nervous. I know I'm good. It's a feel of mine.
The question is,
we'll continue on.
How much time would it take to do?
Right. Exactly.
The question is, how much time would it take him to do it? And is there an interest in it enough that he would want to do it to publish it,
right, and fit into the schedule, because the reason why I brought up his injury was just for the plain simple fact that anything that he was working on got pushed by months, you know, so those things basically got put on the shelf until he you know recover, because you know he needs to be at his office to get things done. Now he's getting back to the office more regularly. I don't think it's every day at the moment, but it's much better than it was. You know, while there, it was nothing. And then I think a couple of weeks ago, it was like one time. You know, his physical therapist is really happy with his progress and so forth. He's actually able to walk around now, you know. I'm assuming he's walking around with a cane. He's not, because in his updates, he has not been mentioning about if he's using your cane or not. But he's going into the office. He's actually driving himself. So I tell you how well he is, you know. So That'd be cool. Obviously, one thing he's actually mentioning, of course, is Saltorians. That'd be kind of interesting, but I don't think it's feasible, which is, of course, one of the things that the Saltorians do is they send out all of these expedition fleets to, you know, all over the universe, you know, to heading towards different galaxies, you know.
Just in case.
Yeah, you know, looking for the Tholians. Where did they went? Where did they go?
Under this rock, under that rock.
Agreed. And actually, one thing about the Tholians is that, at least I don't know, it's possible Gary knows this a lot better than I do. Which is, I'm not sure if all the Tholians went for our galaxy, or if they kind of spread, you know, to different galaxies. Because I know that they did stop by like one galaxy on the way to ours, I think, or a part of, or another expedition did that on the way that oh, that's part of the 412th Battalion. I don't. Gary is a better person for that
One
kind
of
of history.
the things to consider is that, a lot of the stuff wasn't necessarily written with a bigger scope in mind
Right.
when it was first published.
Oh, understood.
So it wasn't fully back written the way that you would expect a lot of people to do something with a newly published thing nowadays.
Right.
The kind of thing that we'd be expecting from like a large company with a humongous staff and everything else. I mean, it's always been a small company with a limited staff.
Oh, agreed.
So, yeah.
The one thing, and well, I was trying to get at is that, they're still trying to interact with other parts of the universe and different empires and maybe different types of ships. Now, that takes a lot more work to do. And I'm not saying that they should, A to B should do that. And I agree that it'd be nice for them to fulfill it. Now, one thing obviously is that, and rightfully so, when A to B originally created, we have the Tholians, and then we have the Sartorians coming in a little bit later, which were kind of added on. The Sartorians finally the reason why the Tholians left their home galaxy, the Sartorians, they finally found them,
Nah.
Now, the thing is, in the original series, the Tholians really, there really wasn't any talk about where they came from, meaning that they
They
were
weren't fleshed out.
extragalactic. You know, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't fleshed out. They were a one-off episode
Yep.
in the series, so.
Yeah, actually, that's one
Take that
thing
for what it is.
for the original series. I don't remember if they ever,
Nope.
they weren't later on in like one of the
Just
next
one.
generation or any of the other,
Now, not in the next generation, but there was something about a time war thing that comes out in Enterprise as a
Oh,
huge driving
right.
force in that. But there's other people like would give you much better like of a historical thing or a lore thing for that than I could, because I only watched a little bit of that. I forget why at the time, but yeah, basically they do have more later on, but I don't think it was Next Generation at all. I think it was one of the like umpteen extra little series. I think Deep Space Nine may have touched on it. I know I'm totally butchering the lore, so
Right.
yeah, those of you out there going, nah, yeah, feel free to tell Paul all about it later. So yes, they did have a little bit later on, but not in the original series, which the stuff is licensed off of for ADB. And
Yeah,
ADB basically wrote their own history for them.
right. Oh, yeah,
So.
that I know. Okay, this is actually from Memory Alpha Found Fandom. It's a Star Trek wiki, which they're saying Tholians are a crystalline species. They had hard carapace that was chiefly mineral.
Carapace.
Yeah. There were six legs that made it possible for them to move in any direction. This is from, okay, there were two arms and so forth. From Enterprise in a Mirror Darkly. Yeah, Star Trek Enterprise.
There you go. And even in the original series, they were just literally a pair of eyes on a screen.
Right.
And the ship with the went into two pieces, two separate ships, and then did the web thing around them.
Right, right. I remember that episode.
There was a wide latitude of stuff of material to use.
Okay.
So.
Du-du-du. Okay.
So where were we going with this again?
Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. I'm just looking at the Star Trek, trying to get some sense of history and origins and background from the original. Obviously, you're correct.
You won't.
Yeah, I know. And just like,
oh, wait, say that again. Was I correct? Oh, yeah. That feels so good.
Thank you so much.
Just two boys and sweetie. Oh. Nice to have that feeling.
Yeah, and, Dave just mentioned that Tholian ships made an appearance on the Star Trek Enterprise. There's a two-part episode, and yep, again, in a Mirror Darkly, Dave saying that it was a fantastic episode. In Deep Space Nine, mentioned the Tholian ambassador in one episode. So they were
not a lot to go on.
Yes, agreed. So, and from the sound look of the wiki, they didn't indicate that they were from a different galaxy, which of course, as you just mentioned, that when it comes to the Tholians, the history of the Tholians, Steve Cole made them up, made up the history in the Starfleet universe, which is not always consistent with Starfleet battles are not always consistent with the history of Star Trek, which is not always consistent with the history of Star Trek.
Exactly. And remember, it was only licensed up to a certain point.
Right.
After which, you know, the power that owned all the IP for the Trek universe kind of like put the squish down.
Right. And obviously, that's one thing that Steve Cole is always concerned about when it comes to modernizing the ships at all. You know, they don't want to run into the possible collision with Paramount, you know, because right now they'll leave them alone, you know, because they get their little bit of money and, you know, they're small. So, you know.
The thing is, he actually beat them in court, which I found to be amazing. So, yeah, but he doesn't want that court fight again.
Right. Oh, nobody wants a court fight because invariably court fight means a lot of money to who gets it? The lawyers.
Oh, yeah, among other things, depending on how you go about it. But, yeah, the biggest problem with it is that as long as he doesn't stray out of his original licensing stuff.
Yeah.
He's good to go. And because he showed the wherewithal to beat them in court before, it's on the Paramount side, they're going to lose more money going after him than they'll gain.
Right.
And that's pretty much probably the driving number one reason why they're leaving him the hell alone.
Right.
So.
Oh. Before I forget, because I forgot in the news portion, as a reminder, there is no episode next week. It is Thanksgiving on Thursday in these United States. So as such, since I live in America, we celebrate Thanksgiving. I will not be doing a podcast on Thanksgiving. Aww. Like as if that's something new. It's not. Anyone who's been with me for any time that knows that I don't do a podcast on Thanksgiving. I might just do a, happy Thanksgiving kind of thing. But that might be all I do. I'm not actually going to broadcast or anything like that.
Yes.
So even if you want to, feel free to text me and say, is there a podcast tonight? And I'll say, no.
Aw. That was okay. It's all good.
Yep.
Sort of, I guess.
Well, I figured I'd tell you before I forget again, because I said I forgot to put it in the news portion. And hopefully, Steve Cole was actually looking. There's who was it? Stephen Perry was asking for ADB to produce an updated module TR. He was asking for a lot more in that, but like a whole new tournament set, which is the basic rules, the module T rules. Color SSDs, which Lord knows, everyone knows color SSDs are expensive as heck to print out and ship. Black and whites are probably easier. EF, of course, the calendar sheet, which is the most, which is, and I gotta love this one. A voucher for an SOB online trial, which Steve Cole and I would have to work out because. We've never had a voucher for an SAP online trial. Gives them everything they need.
Okay, so just tell them to put that on his wish list to Santa, and we'll see how it goes.
Right. Well, Steve Cole replied about the module TR and definitely mentioned later on that no. when it comes to the actual counter sheet, because where do you say it? And that is okay. See, mentioned something which was funny to me. I found a little funny. Steve Cole said the problem is that given that we do sell 20% of our units to brick and mortar stores that agree to never sell at a discount, something I didn't know until now. I know. We don't sell to wholesalers or discount retailers anymore. We'd have to charge a base price high enough that we wouldn't lose any money on a sheet sold to a store. The base price is going to be around $24 a sheet. Three times the normal price of a sheet printed 1,000 at a time. I suspect that it would be so high that you wouldn't want to buy it. And I tend to agree with that statement. It'd be nice to actually have module T. But yeah, oh yeah. Also, the guy mentioned Megahex counters for tournaments, which is not Megahex counters are nice to have. They're nice and large. Someone can easily walk by and actually recognize the ships. But again, counter sheets are expensive, so I'll get out.
Well, if it's, we could do that at freaking gamers if you wanted to do a big scenario. The problem is getting players to come in and do it.
Right. Oh, agreed there. I totally agree there.
Such a small player base. I mean, you've got a few, you got people that like to call in and listen and talk here, but at the end of the day, getting these people to come out of the woodwork, like, it's like pulling teeth. So, it's like, and the thing is, if nobody wants to come out and be seen in public doing their thing, then how do they expect to grow their thing? Because not everything is online. You know, not everything exists through the internet. So I know this may be a radical concept for some, but it's like, you know, how did the thing grow way back in the day? Because it was in a highly visible spot
Right.
at a major convention where
Yeah.
people would see it and say, I want to learn how to play that.
Doug, we've had this discussion many, many, many
Many
times.
times, yes.
And Lord knows we both agree on that we feel like ADB did the wrong thing in moving it to a nice quiet space.
Well, and
It's good.
I'm not even going there. I'm just talking about like right now. I mean, if you know, this other gentleman is talking about, I want this whole tournament module thing. Okay. The reason it's not being done is because there's not going to be a market for it. It's not worth Steve Cole's time and effort to do something that, hey, you know, that's not that difficult for somebody to do as their own labor of love. If they wanted to set up a tournament and have it look all fancy and neat and everything, it wouldn't be that difficult to do. It would be a little time consuming. But on the other hand, it is a bunch of work. And because we don't have a lot of like new people coming into the hobby, into this particular game thing, it's just not going to happen. So, I mean, it's just kind of a sad fact of it. I mean, if some of if people that listen to this podcast, I don't know how many people listen in over time. I mean, you have other people that'll tune in and listen that aren't listening right now. But if you want more people to do the thing that you like to do, you know, schedule something at Gamers and come out and do it. And even if you don't have the turnout for that, do something at Gamers and maybe you'll meet somebody else. I mean, there was one guy in this area where I live that, you know, kind of came out of the woodwork after I've been running Gamers for this will be 16 years coming up. And, you know, a few years ago, this guy came out of the woodwork and said something and then kind of disappeared. And he came back last year and said something and then just kind of faded off. And it's like, yeah, if that's how people are, then they're not going to get new people involved. You know, that's kind of pet peeve of mine, you know. If you want, you should take into consideration what does it take to grow the thing that you want to have done. You know, so I mean, I run Gamers because I like to see these people like twice a year that I don't get to see hardly ever. You know, I get out twice a year right now, as far as gaming stuff goes, for the most part. I can't really think of the last time in the last few years that I've actually gone out to do anything wise other than at Gamers. And that doesn't help, you know, as far as finding new people, because, you know, I'm not getting to the nearest game shop, which is something like probably about 15, 20 miles down the road. You know, used to be around the corner, but they moved to another county. No, they moved to another, not just like another part of the township or something. And it's like it's a graying hobby. And to get more people in, you gotta do the thing and do it publicly. One thing that I remember that I thought was really nice was when a bunch of guys came out of the woodwork and ran some SFB events when we were in Grantville, and they did it with minis on the large map setup. I thought that was really cool. But then again, at least two of those guys moved out of the area and live in upstate New York now. So, it is what it is.
I wonder if they play with Peter Pekia.
I've no idea. Isn't he out west?
Pekia is
I
up
thought he was
north.
out west.
He's right near Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
I sorry, no,
No,
sorry,
I don't think
Albany.
they're that
Albany,
close.
sorry, Albany. Albany.
Yeah, I don't think they're that close. They're like in, they might, they're in like Troy, New York, that area, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, there's more people that play SFB in Troy, New York than there are in Harrisburg, PA, that I know of. Yeah.
Not the, Troy is very close to Schenectady.
Really?
Yeah. It's on the other side of the
I have no clue.
Albany
I'm
Airport.
not. All I know is it's up there somewhere.
Yeah, from Troy to Schenectady is really, for me, it's like, looks like maybe half an hour drive. They're playing in the
Were you
snow.
thinking of doing anything?
Wow. In Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Oh,
Wow.
might be getting a dusting tonight,
Yeah.
according to fam here.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at, I was listening to Ipawa, and they basically were mentioning for my area, which is southeastern mid central Pennsylvania. Basically, we're supposed to get snow, but that the snow will not lay at all on the roads, because it's supposed to be like 36 degrees, so it's gonna fall, hit the ground, melt. I'm happy about that. The reason I'm happy is because of two things. One, Saturday I'm going to go see my brother and have dinner with him and his wife. My whole family's going to be doing that. And number two, Friday morning is when my daughter's supposed to go pick up my son. So it's like
Aww.
I don't want her driving in snow or have to delay going to pick him up.
Oh yeah. From that perspective, got it. Although I do like it when it hits and it stays and they get it off of the roads, but it stays and it just looks nice.
I agreed. I love snow covered trees. It's just
And the kids can go out and play in it.
Agreed. It's been a while
So.
since I've played in the snow. Of course, most of the time I see snow, it's like, okay, get the snow plow out, snow blower. Which actually, I have to work on my snow blower. I gotta go take it to my next door neighbor, see if he can help me with it. Which is one of my tires is flat. I'm not sure if it's got the flat or there's something that he can help me with to fill up the air. It maybe just needs air in the tire. I'm hoping it's just that. It's not like the seal's broken and he needs to do something drastic. Or at least he could tell me what to do. Because if I need to take it anywhere, I'm gonna have to get him. Like, can we kind of put this in your truck? Have nothing, nowhere else to get it there. At the.
Won't fit in the Jeep, huh?
No. No, oh, it definitely won't fit in the Jeep. I don't think I can put everything down.
The flip side of that is if it's just, it could be that you could just replace the wheel. That might be cheaper than taking it somewhere.
True.
And not too difficult to fix.
Yeah. The thing, I'll first check with my neighbor because my neighbor helped me fix thing. With a sheared pin.
Yeah, another thing is actually have to go to a shop. If you talk to like a lot of some of these places will like pick it up for you.
Yeah. True.
You know, they'll have I remember doing that when I was young as like one of the various odd jobs I did when I was first out of the army.
Mm-hmm.
One of those was like a small repair shop had a thing where they needed somebody to just basically deliver mowers that they fixed. It's like, you know, literally you drive to somebody's place, you take the mower off the back of the pickup or off the trailer, and mm-hmm. you let them sign for it, and you say bye bye.
Right, understood.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you might that kind of setup. It just might cost an extra like $10-$20 something for that.
Yeah, probably. And then I have to get.
And again, you know, and again, there's also a certain point where it just might be, if it's just literally a flat tire. How much does a new wheel cost?
I don't.
With a new tire on it. That's a possibility.
I don't know. I don't even know how to get it off the snowblower. So I have to look at it before I run into an issue. I didn't realize that it was flat until the last snow of last year. So.
Yeah. That's one of the things that makes me feel kind of like wanting the house thing again. Because like at the place we're renting right now, I don't have to do any of that stuff
mm-hmm.
because the landlord's contractually obligated to like have somebody like clear off all the snow and stuff like that.
Oh,
they even do the leaf maintenance and yard and crap.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It sounds like when my wife and I had a condo where basically, it was like a, what I'm thinking of.
HOA? Like a homeowner's association?
No, I had a homeowner's association. Don't get me started on that guy. On that, which was nuts. But,
yeah, nobody likes those.
But, so it was a condo. So all the everything outside the house was taken responsibility by the homeowner association was we paid the guys to keep for maintenance of the place, and they also did all the snow blowing and all that kind of thing. Of course, what ticked me off is that we had to pay them extra to actually plow the snow. Every single year we paid extra for that. Every single depend upon how many times that we got snow.
Anyway. Condominium or covenant or something like that.
Yeah, it was a condo. Yeah, we owned the house. It was we had a mortgage and all that kind of. But you know, again, the condo. So we owned the inside. We didn't own the outside. But anyhow,
yeah.
To get back to actually Starfleet Universe.
Oh yeah.
As I mentioned in the news portion, the Sapphire Star 18 tournament is set. That the sign-ups are closed. We got all 16. Actually, one thing I did was I actually emailed Rick. Where is he? Where is he? There's Masia. He's going to fly Hydrogen versus Seth Szymanski's in the Orion, that should be an interesting fight. We have Lee Hanna versus Jeff Clark. That's going to be IC versus the Romulan RKR. So it's going to be a plasma duel. All kinds of fun stuff there. Then we have Ron Brynmeyer versus Justin Reuter. That's the Wibbis. You know, it's the... sure. I was going to say, it's in the middle. One drone, one phaser, one. So it's not the drone. I'm sorry, it's not the Klingon configuration or the Zinni configuration versus the Zinni. Which is going to be Justin's.
Yeah.
Steve McCann is in his... Yeah, big surprise. Winox box. Three phaser ones and a phaser G. Big surprise. He does well.
And you're going to be the sacrificial crick.
Yeah, I'm not playing against him at the moment. To play against him, I think I had to make it to the finals. Because he's on the other side of the tree. He's going to be facing George Hornberg in the Lyrian. And Peter Bakia, big surprise, he's in the Gorn. He's been in the Gorn lately. Then he was in his ship for the longest period of time. He actually had a set of counters, which were what he played in the tournament. And I still remember how worn those things were. And he could fly against Dana Madsen in the Lyrian. Daniel Bisteff in the Hydran is going to fly against some guy called Paul Franz in the Saltorian. He's in, you know, this guy.
Oh, you're playing against the Hydran?
Yeah.
In the first one?
Yeah.
Sweet.
This is going to be insane.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I know it's going to be interesting. Because
let me give you a pro tip. Don't get shot at point blank range.
Duh. That's a dull one. We got Bill Scheller actually signed up. He's going to fly his Klingon. That to me is not the first time he's done that. And against John Wrigley in the Tholian. And they got Jack Taylor in the Zinni with against Carl Magnus Carlsen in the Raman RKR, which to me is one of the more interesting battles, just because we've got drone versus plasma.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
Like, yes.
Who wants to anchor who?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, the good thing for the Romulan, obviously, is that he's the turn mode B versus the Zinni's turn mode C. But, of course, the problem is with the Romulan, the seeking weapons cost power, while the Zinni doesn't cost you a single point of energy to arm the weapon or fire it.
Disruptors. Yeah, well, but he's also got direct fire weapons.
That's true. And decent arcs. FAR, FAL. You know, for disruptors. So he can still fire disruptors while he is facing away from the Romulan, which is a good thing, because then you can still be inflicting damage on him while you're running away from his plasma, assuming it got close in. Usually, you know, the Romulan will try to keep you at a distance, and you'll run away from the plasma, which is a good thing because you want to bring it down. And the idea in that case always is timing. You want to try to get it so that the plasma chucker doesn't have as many heavy torpedoes against when you come in for a close-in attack. And obviously, fortunately, the Zinni has drones, so he can he has his own seeking weapon, so the Romulan might also be running away, or at the very least wasting his energy on phasers to knock down the drones. Now, the Saltorian versus the Hydran, that's going to be fun.
Of an interesting matchup, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of interesting.
Yeah, because to me, it's not the Hydran, it's not the ship, it's the fighters. Because you have the fighters which are totally independent of the ship. And they can.
But they're so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
They're so vulnerable, though. I mean, his problem is, he knows it's kind of a. It's an interesting tactical issue. I mean, you know, he launches them, they're dead. If you have anything that you put into them, you've got to delay before they can shoot. So he's got
to, and they're limited to speed 15.
Yeah, and he's got to have it timed. He can get them out, and it's either going to suck up some of your firepower so he can get his ship in on you. Or he's going to use them to help finish you off.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a difficult thing to use to get an intermediary shot in or to get an early bit of damage in on you. About the only way it's going to work for him is if he can time it so that you've fired everything and then he can launch them and can be close enough to hurt your ship. Or he's going to have it so he can launch them. They're far enough away that you have to waste a lot of weapons on killing them. And he can get in on your ship. Or you ignore them and try to kill a ship and he lives long enough to tractor you and let them finish you off. Yeah. So. Because, yeah. I mean, he doesn't need a lot if he can get those two guys on a down shield of yours at range zero with a het.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be hurting. Probably going to lose. But on the other hand, they are very vulnerable. I mean, you could take them out with hit and run raids. You know, you get a shield down on him. It might be like a desperation move, but you got a lot of transporters.
That is true.
And, but the other side of that is if you can do enough damage to destroy his fighters, then you're probably going to win the game anyhow. So just so many different variables on it. But hey, we should probably talk out an entire strategy session just so that your opponent can hear it. And that way, when your plan is completely not followed, your opponent will be utterly surprised.
Oh, exactly. Well, that's the thing. There's a question, will I actually follow the tactical advice given stick to the plan?
Okay. I'll be taking bets on this at aisle six. Exactly. So who knows? If you want to talk about that, that's kind of an interesting fight, because if there's one ship I could think of in the game that is going to be really particularly vulnerable to your ship, it is that one. Because you should be able to get a shield down on them and get a second or third pass on it. You keep your speed up. You don't let them anchor you. You know, he's more in danger from being Mitzia than you are.
That is very true. That's why invariably Hydran has a hard time winning tournaments, is because of the Mizia.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's basically it. Especially when you're getting past the first few rounds, and the fact that almost every tournament's going to be a shark tank, because you know that's the hardcore people left in the game for the most part. You know, the very experienced players from way back in the day that have decades of experience with whatever ship they're flying and or just in the game itself.
Yep. Oh, agreed. So. Agreed. If I beat Daniel, then I will be facing either Peter Bakia, who's been playing for so long, again in the Gorn, or Dana Medson, who's in the Laren. That's assuming I get past the Hydran first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bill Schiller's the Klingon versus the Tholian should be interesting. Now, if the Tholian could continue on and I can get to like Which the semifinals Lions? Against against John Wrigley. That would be interesting.
Which Tholian version?
Oh, that's it did not posted here. Give me a sec. In case you don't know, I get emails on those. Okay. Turn 18, and this is. And this is who? Okay. It wasn't Jude, it wasn't Stephen, it wasn't Daniel, Seth.
You know what would make it really interesting is if they just shuffled all the players every round. So you don't know who you're going to fight.
Oh, there
next.
It is. Okay. Wrigley. crash and burn. He's playing the Neil Tholian.
Ah, okay. I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that one more than I liked the other one.
The Archeo?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good ship in its own right. It's well balanced, but I just always kind of thought it was a little too fragile compared to the Neo-Tholian.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. And the great thing, well, I'm not sure that's good or bad, which is obviously the big thing with the Archeo-Tholian is that it's got a lot of center hull. While the Neo has it split between forward hull and aft hull.
Yeah. But I think the Neo's slightly more robust. Like, for like just overall in a tournament setting, I think it's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my opinion.
Oh, understood. Understood.
Any ship can win against any opponent, theoretically.
That is true. That is true. It's like baseball. On any given day, either team can win. You can have the best team versus the worst team, which actually, in my mind, happened this year when it comes to the Yankees versus the White Sox. And the White Sox actually, on one game, they completely trounced the Yankees. It was actually beautiful. It was gorgeous. I loved it. I watched the whole game. It was one of the days that I couldn't watch the Orioles because I think the Orioles weren't playing that day. So I watched the Yankees versus the White Sox. So. And actually, it was a pretty good game. I enjoyed that the Yankees couldn't hit worth a darn, and the White Sox just kept on beating up on the Yankees pitchers. So.
Okay.
Not to have anything against the Yankees.
No.
Trust me, I was ever seen, there was this one guy I haven't seen him for a while, but for a couple of weeks there I'd run into him because he worked at the grocery store that I go to every Saturday morning, and he was a Yankee fan, and he noticed, of course, I had my normal Orioles regalia, my baseball cap. And actually, my T-shirt, I wasn't wearing my... I don't think I was wearing my hoodie those days because it wasn't that cold. But, you know, he'd bring up the Orioles, and we'd talk a little bit about baseball. And, of course, I grumble. I say grumble because against the Yankees. And, when I'm talking to a Yankees fan, I'm not going to malign him or anything. The Yankees are a pretty good club, but, of course, they're my enemies, so... Is that the enemies of my baseball team? And that's the baseball is just one of those things that I can hate the team, but like the players individually. It's just like the Red Sox.
They're rivals.
Yep, they're a rival. Exactly. Big Papi and the Red Sox. I actually, the last game, because he was retiring, the last game he was playing against Baltimore, I actually. Quickly, I found out that he was going to be there. It was going to be the last game against the Boston Red Sox. I quickly got a ticket, drove down to Baltimore to watch Big Papi play against the Orioles. Now, the Red Sox beat the Orioles, so I wasn't happy. But I went to see Big Pappy play because of, Big Pappy, he's a great guy. He really is. But he was, again, he was a Red Sox, so I never wanted to see him come up a bat against my Orioles because he would actually hit really good. Anyhow, so, for those of you, okay, two things about Sapphire Star 18 tournament. Number two things. Number one, for those playing in it, a reminder, first round needs to be completed by December 12th. Number one. I'm sure he gave us a little extra because of Thanksgiving. Round two needs to be done by January 2nd. They're allowing for Christmas and New Year's. That's number one. Number two, Dana and Peter will be playing tomorrow night. That's Friday night. So if you're listening to this on Friday, hopefully you are. Or if you're watching and you want to get on SOB Online, remember, you can get on, just register for an account. And you can log in, and it's free. So if you want to, you can watch the game live. Obviously you have to download the client and so forth. It should be beautiful. They're playing tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. I know for you West Coasters, that's a little bit early. That's 4 o'clock, but of course they're on the East Coast, so just like I am on the East Coast. But so that's two minor things I wanted to bring up about the tournament before we end the discussion at the moment, because Lord knows, as you said, I need to keep up my speed against the Hydran. It's because I do not want to get close to the Hydran. I don't want to get within range three.
Not initially.
No, yeah. Because my biggest issue is the fusions and the phasers.
Yep.
And of course, I'm not gonna be able to avoid the Hellbores, but if I can keep a good distance, outside of range five, that'd be pretty good. Now, obviously, here's the problem. I want to make sure his weapons are not in arc while I'm in range five, because I want to be within range five so I can do as much damage as possible to him. So I was one of those catch 22s when it comes to offense versus defense.
What's your max range on your shield crackers?
I'm pretty sure that's range 10. And
how many do you have? Do you have two or three?
I got three. Let me bring it up real quick. Shield cracker. Yeah, out the range 10. And that's a 50% shot at range 10. 1 to 3 gets 4 points of damage. Bet. Yep. Range.
That's every turn, right?
That's every turn. They cost 2 points of power to arm. 1, 3 to 5. Range 3 to 5, it's 1 to 4 to hit. Range 1 to 2, 1 to 5. And range 0, it's an automatic hit, 1 to 6. I know if they have their wild weasels going with a +2, then you're going to have a shift there, Now, of course, the big issue with the particle cannons is range from 5 to 15. It's a 50% shot to hit.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you also have that potential second shot in there, too.
Yes, I do. Especially if I'm at longer range and I fire at two points from the particle. It costs me 2 points to fire the particle cannon for the first shot. It only costs me 1 point of energy to fire that second shot. And, of course, you can do an overload, which will be 3 points of power for the first shot. And then 1 point of power for the second shot. And that's one thing I have to look up a little bit about the particle cannons, because I know you can't fire two overloads. That I know. But forget how, if you have to fire your overload shot first and then standard on your second shot, or you, yeah, I think that's the case, that overload shot must be the, well, Cleveland's beating Pittsburgh 18-6 at the moment. Wow. Early fourth quarter. Anyhow, Lord knows I was not happy when the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Ravens. Don't mind me. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that you have to, as a particle can, you have to fire your fire overload shot. It has to be the first shot. It's been a while since I looked up the rules on that, but I feel pretty confident in saying that is the case. So it'd be, three and one, so a total of 4 points of energy for each one to fire twice, with one being an overload. Now, obviously, the biggest issue with the second firing is you have to wait 12 impulses. But it's going to be fine as long as your first shot is early on in the turn. Well, my keys curl up a nice ball. It's actually not bothering. I mean, he must be really tired. I'm wondering if you got the chill treats. My one cat,
The
Zooks.
chill.
He likes cleaning up after my one cat, and we give her chill treats, because she's really kind, not like skittish and so forth with other three cats, and so we give her chill treats. The problem is that if some other cat eats them, invariably they'll pass out. And that's what he's acting like at the moment. Is that he's not climbing me or anything like that, so he might have a few of the chill treats.
Okay. Who's a good kitty
Yeah,
for?
well, of course, Katara has those treats, and then from lately, I've been doing my best to give her attention, which I think those two things have really helped her. So, anyhow, actually, let me.
Attention can be a treat all by itself.
Oh, understood. Understood. I wanted to look at something if I could find it. I forget what number it is. There's the webcaster. Yes,
That
I'm looking direct for our weapons. Snare, web fist, web breaker. Okay, we're getting into web fist. There's the web fist and the web breaker. Let me tap the web breaker. Shield cracker. Particle cannon, there they be. Arming cost. Right. Okay, the cost. Okay. Ooh. No. Okay. Here it is. Cost of each shot is as follows. Overload shot, first or second shot for the turn is 3 points. Standard shot is 2 points. If it's the first shot, second shot, it's 1 point of energy. Now, one thing I need to look up is I want to see, can you do that? Can fire up to two shots a turn, but cannot fire a shot within 12 impulses, including a shot fired of the previous turn. Either shot is given in a turn, but not both shots. Either shot in a given turn, but not both shots, can be overloaded, and the overload energy can be power that was allocated by the power capacitor or drawn from reserve power. Note that the reserve power might be allocated to the capacitor in mid-turn to allow for overload shot later in the turn. Yeah, because it's capacitor. In theory, what you can do is, If you know you're gonna lose your batteries, you can transfer the energy into like one of the particle cannon capacitors, so then you actually can fire overloaded. So yeah, so you can overload. You can do one shot per turn, but it can be the first shot or the second shot. So if it's the second shot, then you're using 5 points.
You could theoretically go in there and get like all four of them to test his shields, and then use the overload function to take down the rest of the way.
True. True. The last time what you do is you use the shield cracker to test the shields.
Yeah, but you get your first. You get your first shots in on them,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you weak shield, and then you run away, and then you turn back at them and do your overloads to take the shield the rest down.
Mm-hmm.
Then use your phasers to mitzy the other guy.
That is an interesting idea, which is basically fully charge the capacitor, and then come in slow. No. I was thinking about coming in
not
slowly,
too slowly,
and then fire a longer range with standards, and then keep closing in. And then if you get the timing has is the tough part. Do you then come in and fire the overloads at a closer range?
Well, yeah, and the problem is he wants to get to close range.
Understood. I agree there.
Which is, yeah. So
at the same time, the question is: do you want to go for the outside of the board or the inside of the board? Usually, you want to go for the inside. But that's not. You can't always maintain that because of the other players can come in and basically beat the crap out of you if you try to hold the ground. Especially if you want to try to keep an open range.
Here's the thing. You come in and you keep a medium speed to start, and then you speed up and you try to clip range 15 or so with your standards,
mm-hmm.
and your maybe like range 10 with your standards and your you're what you call
shield crackers.
All in one shot. Your shield crackers. You try to get his. You get one of his shields down, especially his number one. If you can knock his number one shield down, it almost doesn't matter as long as you can keep him from getting to close range. Because if you can just start peppering a couple phasers here, a couple phasers there, in the. You know, range 8 or less bracket, you're good. You can mitzia him to death. The only downside is, if you mitzia him to death, does he get to where he can tractor you, or do you kill his tractors along the way? Do you manage to keep him from being able to put his fighters on you? You know, if it takes all of your weapons to take out all of his weapons.
Right, right.
So, there's a lot to it. I think you're looking at a multi-turn. The longer you can play it, the more likely it is for you to win kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do an overload pass on him, you know, maybe if it's necessary, like just overload two of them and be ready to use reserve power to overload the other two. Or what's the arcs on those things? Are they funky or are they all in the same forward arc?
All in the same forward arc.
So there's no R or L?
Nope.
Thrown in there?
Nope.
Okay.
I wish.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, the tricky part is getting that second shot in You could also just treat them like disruptors and not worry about the second shot in a particular turn.
Yeah.
And just do like mid-range passes. You know, handful of phasers and all your particle cannons. Grind down his number one shield, even if he bricks it. Take however many turns of running around the edge. If he's chasing you, you're gonna get shots on his number one. You get his number one shield down, and the problem for him is everything bears through it.
True.
So
And
you take out his number one shield, and then you just Mitzia him. So, and if he launches those fighters and he does it at range, so he can chase you down and then let the fighters come in later. Hey, guess what? You know, you can come back around and kill those things with particle cannons at range. Cripple them. You know, essentially neuter them.
Right.
The other thing you got to be really aware of is he has dual bays on that. So if
Correct.
he starts with two, he could start with a pair of suicide shuttles and load a couple partial suicide shuttles too. So that when he does get in close on you, he launches the partials. You kill them, they explode. Okay. Okay, they were king, yay, and then he launches the big ones. Or he just, you know, launches them randomly. It doesn't matter how he does it, but he gets multiple opportunities with that dual bay that could really hurt you.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, but again, none of that really means much if you Mitzi all his weapons off.
That is true. If he
And
has
only
no weapons, it makes
Well,
him.
the flip side of that is once all his weapons are gone, if you have anything left in the tank, if you save your a few phasers, the gamble part is, can you kill his fighters? I mean, you can tractor them at range three, and he can het to get out of it, but it changes his attack vector because he has to burn a het to do it. Which means if he burns a het to do it, even if he gets to range zero, he can't then het on your ship to get a down shield necessarily.
True.
If he doesn't, and you hold him out at range three, his effectiveness with them is massively reduced. So if he does fire them at range three, he's basically could be potentially wasting them. So there's just so much to it. And of course, you've got your own shuttles. Do you
Yep.
have dual bays on that thing?
No.
So yeah, you could theoretically, if you really wanted to, do the non-overloaded occasional hit with the particle cannons and a handful of phasers to grind his shields down and run away while charging up a pair of suicide shuttles to go with the two that you start with held. And you could really mess his day up too. Especially if he's stern chasing you. You get a shield down on him and you start knocking his phasers off. And maybe you get lucky and knock off a tractor or two. You could put him in a position where you've got a couple of suicide shuttles as roving landmines for you, for him to run into or run around. So, and if you tractor him, then you could actually maneuver him into them. So, just a random thought.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, getting close, and hopefully by that time you've knocked down definitely the fusions, and some of the phasers. So.
Yeah, you're your biggest concern for him is getting rid of his two gats eventually.
Exactly.
And his fusions. And if you get rid of like all four fusions, by that time you'll have gotten rid of his Hellbores and all of his phasers. Like I said, he's really vulnerable to Mitzia attacks. You get rid of his tractors though, that's huge.
Yeah, especially if he wants to use his fighters as basically additional weapons for the ship. I'm not saying that he will do that against a Saltorian. Obviously, I've seen that being done against like plasma arm ships. They have the additional gats out there.
Yeah. The real question is going to be, when does he launch his fighters? Does he keep them in? Do you get to Mitzi him? Do you get to grind down a shield of his? I'm thinking almost to the point that you should probably just hold your shield crackers and play phaser boat with him and just make him chase you around, control the middle of the board. Don't chase him. He could try the subtlety game and just weaken one of your shields and start doing the Hellbore thing. Which is a distinct possibility, especially if you try to Mitzia him, he might try to Mitzia you.
Right.
Which would be kind of funny, because if you're making him chase you, then, you know, it's a stern chase for him, but on the other hand, he's only got two Hellbores, not four. Or three. So, I think you got an interesting fight, and really it's going to come down to pick a tactic and see what he's trying to do and see if you can get one of his shields down so you can just Mitzia him. The hardest part of the whole thing is getting a second shield cracker attack in a turn without getting overrun. It's possible you might be able to do it, but, you know, the question's going to be, do you manage to do it without burning a hit and leaving yourself vulnerable? I don't know. It's just so many different variables in this one.
Understood. Well, see if I can get them lined up for maybe next weekend, possibly. Have to wait and see.
Okay. If you feel like stopping up here sometime, let me know.
We'll do. Okay. Well, with that, I think we'll close it up for tonight. Doug, it's always a pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me on. Always nice to come on and talk. Yay.
Hey. See you, Omaha.
She is napping away.
Awesome. Got the same thing for Zooks over here.
It's probably the snow coming. Yeah. I can feel the snow. It's time to hibernate-ish. Gotta save my energy.
Yep.
I'm a cat.
Yeah,
exactly.
Don't get me started. I'm sure the cats are going to want to be outside. They'll see how cold it is and go back inside. Yeah, because we have a side porch here, so we can open up the side door, let them out onto the porch. Because it's screened in, they can walk out, and then they'll realize how cold it is and come back in, and we don't have to worry about losing them outside.
So. She has been an indoor cat her whole life. Which is interesting because her parents were outdoor cats. But she actually got out once at my mom's house. Looked around, said, screw this, and went back inside.
Yeah.
And And then at the apartment that we were at for like 3 years, she got out like she went out into the hallway like once or twice and then said, screw this, and went back into the apartment. It's like,
Understood.
yeah.
Yeah, she likes the familiar.
Yes, there is that, so.
Okay, well, Doug, you have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
So that's, we have a nice little discussion about the juggernaut again, which is always nice to talk about that. And Saltorians all over the place, including talked a little bit about the Sapphire Star 18 tournament, which they've got all the sign-up is closed. It's all set. As I said, there's a game happening 7 o'clock Friday night. That's going to be November 22nd. If you're listening to this after the fact, so if you're after the 22nd, then it's gone. You probably you missed it. Well, at least you missed the first part of it. You never know with SFB Online games if it's going to be a one parter, two parter, five parter. All depends on the game. Well, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.